Good evening, everyone. We are ready to finally begin Maseches Gittin, which should be very exciting. We've already finished Maseches Gittin. Now we're going to start Maseches Gittin. We're going to actually begin from Daf Beis Amud Aleph. What we're going to do is as follows. I think I mentioned in the past, and I mentioned now again, we'll likely mention again in the future, that the first parak of Maseches Gittin is a little bit of an interesting limud, insofar as most of the richer conceptual discussions, most of the sugyos, emerge from Tosfos rather than from the Gemara itself. The Gemara is preoccupied with a particular Din D'Rabbanan pertaining to the delivery of a get. We'll see that Din D'Rabbanan in the very first Mishnah. But Tosfos branch off from that discussion in the Gemara, very fundamental Shas issues that that move well beyond Maseches Gittin, as we will begin to see tonight. The first Amud of Maseches Gittin is really just a Mishnah. We're going to read that Mishnah together, and then hopefully we will look at Tosfos, one of the important Tosfos on this daf. Tonight we're going to look at the Gramaska of Ashkelon Kedarim. There are really three very important Tosfos, and just on the Mishnah itself, that we are going to take a look at. This is going to be the first of those three. And each one will take us into a different sugya, a different topic pertaining to broader Shas issues. The people online, do you have Mar Makomos?
No.
I don't have Mar Makomos. I'm going to send you Mar Makomos very, very quickly, and then we'll get straight into this first Mishnah. Let me just send it to... Okay, it's now emailed to you both. Okay, here we go. We're going to take it from the beginning of the first Mishnah. This is the first source on the source sheet, or if you want to see it in the original Tzuras HaDaf, it's, of course, the very beginning of Maseches Gittin. Hamevi get mi medina sayam. The scenario that Maseches Gittin begins with is a scenario in which someone is delivering a get from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, or at least at face value, that's what it refers to. We'll see in the Gemara itself that it may expand or contract the particular scenario. What if you're delivering it between two countries in Chutz La'aretz or two distant places within Eretz Yisrael? So we'll see all those scenarios discussed as we get into the Gemara itself. But the initial case discussed by the Mishnah is one is in Chutz La'aretz delivering a get to Eretz Yisrael. And the Mishnah declares, Tzarech sheyomar b'fanei nechtav u'b'fanei nechtav. When the person delivers this get, he must declare this get was written and signed in my presence in front of me. In other words, he needs to deliver some verbal testimony that the get is indeed a legitimate, valid get. He can't just say, oh, I'm just a delivery man, don't ask me any questions. I'm just the U.S. Postal Service or UPS or FedEx. You can't just be a delivery man. If you are appointed as a messenger, as a shliach, as an agent to deliver the get, you need to deliver a verbal testimony that indeed the get is valid. Now, the rest of the Mishnah pertains to other scenarios, really geographic scenarios, of when this halacha may or may not apply. So if you look at the very second line, third word, Rama Gamliel Omer, Rama Gamliel declares, Ava maybe minarakama minachagar, even if you're reka machagar, even if you're delivering from these particular places, that would require b'fanei nechtam as well. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, afilu mikfar ludim lulud, even from far ludim lulud. In each of these cases, these geographic descriptions are telling you that even in these locations, you require b'fanei nechtam.
What is he delivering to? He says, is it Bez Din? Is it to the woman?
To the woman, presumably in the presence of Bez Din. We'll assume. Okay. Again, who exactly b'fanei nechtam needs to be said in front of, and what exactly the purpose of b'fanei nechtam is, what exactly the mechanics are, these are interesting questions that we will, Be'ez Hashem, get into at some point. Okay. But bear in mind, again, the sugya of b'fanei nechtam, it really encompasses the first six or seven dapim of the Masechta. So it's really hard to treat it as one particular topic. What we will likely do is we'll probably go through Gemaras discussing tangential topics brought up by Tosfos, and then once we get through all those dapim, we'll try to do some meta-analysis of the b'fanei nechtav as a whole. But we'll see probably relatively soon that Rashi and Tosfos already debate how exactly b'fanei nechtav works, and we'll get into those mechanics at some point. The Chachamim disagree, and they say, So they hold, the Chachamim say, that you only need b'fanei nechtam from Medina Sayam to Eretz Yisrael. They also add that if you're going from one country to another country, one province to another province within Chutz Aretz, that requires Bifana Nechtav and Bifana Nechtav as well. And that's going to be an important line that the Gemara will assess. Fine. Rav Shum ben Gamliel Omer Afilu Mehegmonia Lehegmonia. Rav Shum ben Gamliel says, even from one hegemon to hegemonia to another hegemonia, right? These if you look at Rashi, Rashi already explains, but Gemara Mefarish Ir Acha Shahayu Bashnei Hegmonim. There was one city that was divided. We can think of historical examples of that when there were different authorities reigning over different parts of the city. So if there were different authorities not at peace with one another that divided a particular city, then even one part of the city to the other would require Bifanei Nechtav and Bifanei Nechtam. Yerushalayim, Ira Kodesh, before 1967, if you were going from one side to the other, that would require Bifanei Nechtav u Bifanei Nechtam. Baruch Hashem, of course, now it would not. But that is hegmonia la hegmonia. And then Rabbi Yehuda comes along and tries to define the precise borders of Eretz Yisrael, which is going to be very relevant for us tonight. This is six lines up from the bottom. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Merakam Mizmach, Merakam Kemizrach, that town is the border of on the east. May Ashkelon Ladarum, but Ashkelon Kedarum, that town, Ashkelon, is the south. May Akko Litzafon, but Akko Kitzafon. Critical line for us. That's going to be very important. Sounds just like another geographic description, but you'll see why it will be important once we turn to Tosfos. Akko in the north is like the north. In other words, Akko is the northern boundary, but the town of Akko itself is Kitzafon. In other words, is a part of Eretz Yisrael or Chutz Aretz. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Akko is part of Chutz Aretz. It is Kitzafon. So it's the northern border. It's a border town, but it's clearly on one side of the border. It is north of Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Meir Omer, Akko ke Eretz Yisrael legitin. Rabbi Meir says that Akko is like Eretz Yisrael for Gittin purposes. And then finally, the Mishnah concludes, maybe get be Eretz Yisrael, eino tzarech sheyomer b'fanei nechtam b'fanei nechtam. If you bring a get within Eretz Yisrael, you do not need to say b'fanei nechtam b'fanei nechtam. This verbal declaration is unnecessary within Eretz Yisrael. V'em yeshul av orerim yiskayim b'chosamav. And if people start to raise questions or claims that the get is invalid, then you'll just have formal testimony to validate the get. Yiskayim b'chosamav is a concept called kiyum shtaros, which we may or may not discuss at some point as we explore this parak. But kiyum shtaros means that you have people come in and effectively say, these signatures are valid signatures. I recognize this witness's signature. I know that this is correct. I've seen it on other documents. And they will testify that indeed the signatures are accurate and that the get is indeed valid. So you don't have this verbal statement at the very outset attesting to the validity of the get, but post facto, instead of being proactive about it within Eretz Yisrael, we're reactive. And if somebody raises claims against the kashrus and validity of the get, then we will bring in other witnesses to indeed testify to its kashrus. Okay, that is the Mishnah. Now again, so the Mishnah itself is really about this din of b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam, and defining different scenarios or boundaries of Eretz Yisrael such that it would be relevant. But we are going to, as I said at the outset, explore some of the issues brought up by Tosfos that this Mishnah raises. And one are several questions that Tosfos raise about the precise borders of Eretz Yisrael. And Tosfos note that this Mishnah, we're in Dibur HaMaskil v'Ashkelon Kedarum. It is not fully on the source sheets themselves. So for those who are following on Zoom, it might be helpful if you have a gittin.bezimut aleph, or you can pull one up on hebrewbooks.org. That might be helpful for the beginning of this year, but soon we'll move back to the source sheets. What is the halacha in these various, what is the halacha pertaining to these various places, and what is part of Eretz Yisrael and what is not? So Tosfos basically are going to raise other gemaras that contest the assertion of our Mishnah. The Mishnah says there are several border towns, and in the case of each border town, the Mishnah said they are not part of Eretz Yisrael. But Tosfos are going to look at other Gemaras that seem to indicate that they are part of Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos will offer pragmatic solutions in each case, but in one of those cases, particularly the case of Akko, we will see that Tosfos' solution is not the only solution, and some of the other solutions actually touch on much larger conceptual issues pertaining to our definition of Eretz Yisrael as a whole, and what Eretz Yisrael's halachic status is, not just for the area of Gittin, but really for Kol HaTorah Kula. So let's take a look at what Tosfos have to say. But Ashkelon Kedarim, you'll see that I put a little number one by the very beginning of Tosfos. Hiksha Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam asked, "To Ashkelon may Eretz Yisrael he?" If you recall, our Mishnah said that Ashkelon is the southern border of Eretz Yisrael, and it is south of the border. It is the northernmost town in Chutz La'aretz, but it is south of the border of Eretz Yisrael. And Tosfos note that other sources seem to indicate that Ashkelon is part of Eretz Yisrael. How do I know that? Because there's a pasuk in Sefer Yoshua that says Zosa Aretz Anish Aretz VaAshlo Diva Ashkeloni Uksiv Hipilo LiYisrael Anachalaka Asher Tzivisicha. So you have these the Achakach Lechdua Kedeksiv B'Shovdim VaYokod Yehuda Es Azav Es Ashkelon VeEs Kevula. You have psukim that say that one of the unconquered areas of Eretz Yisrael was Ashkelon. Now, if it was an unconquered part of Eretz Yisrael, then clearly it is part of Eretz Yisrael. And further, you have psukim and Sefer Shoftim that say ultimately they did conquer that part of Eretz Yisrael. So how can our Mishnah say that Ashkelon is not part of Eretz Yisrael if you have psukim in Nevi'im that say that Ashkelon is? So Rabbeinu Tam offers an answer. That's the second underline there. It's two lines down in the Tosos, the very beginning of the line. The Omer Rabbeinu Tam, to Ole Bavel Lo Kivshua. This is a very important line, and I'm going to try to unpack it. Tosfos within those five words or four words, Ole Bavel Lo Kivshua, are really packing in a lot of background information that we will try to unpack now. There were two points when the Bnei Yisrael effectively conquered the land of Eretz Yisrael. One was in the time of Yoshua, of course, in Sefer Yoshua. They went and they conquered the land. They started with Yericho and then Ai, and then they had up further conquests in the south and the north. That was the whole story of Sefer Yoshua, the first 13 prakim or so of Sefer Yoshua. Then, of course, the Bnei Yisrael were there for many, many years. There's the time of the Shoftim, the time of Malchus Beis David, the split between Malchus Yehuda and Malchus Yisrael. Ultimately, Nebuchadnezzar destroys the Beis HaMikdash, and the Jews go into exile for 70 years. Then, after 70 years, we have what are called the Ole Bavel. They didn't really conquer the land, but they were given permission to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And Ezra, Nehemiah, those Svarim at the end of Ksuvim, tell the story of the Shivat Zion, of the return to Zion that occurred in those days. Now, those two historical episodes are very important for our understanding of the eternal sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. As we will see, the borders of those two periods, or those two episodes in which Eretz Yisrael was habitated by the Jewish people, were not identical. There were some areas that were conquered by Yehoshua that the Ole Bavel did not settle. And we will see as well that according to the way we paskin, it's really a machlokas in the Gemara, but according to the way we paskin, it was that second Yishuv Eretz Yisrael that imbued eternal sanctity into Eretz Yisrael. If you had a part of Eretz Yisrael that was conquered by Yehoshua, but wasn't resettled later in the time of Shivat Zion, in the time of the Ole Bavel, that does not have the same eternal sanctity as the parts that were settled by the Ole Bavel. That is the halacha. So what is Rabbeinu Tam saying here? Why is that? Okay, so it's a great question. The simple answer would be that it's a much larger topic, and we're really only going to touch on it very tangentially tonight. We're going to touch on parts of that topic, but the question was, why is it that it's defined by the second rather than the first?
Do you think Yoshua was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch
Hu? Correct. So you think Yoshua was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So it seems like the form of sanctifying was different. One was kivush. Yoshua sanctified through conquest. The other was through yishuv, was through settling. Now, conquest is something that can be undone, right? Conquest is related to sovereignty, right? So once it was unconquered, if you will, or it was conquered by others, that kind of almost undid the sanctification that Yoshua achieved. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael was not through conquest or sovereignty. It was the mere fact that they had settled the land, and that had a more lasting sanctification of Eretz Yisrael.
Wasn't it yishuv after kibush? And there was yishuv in Eretz Yisrael after kibush.
Yoshua, of course, settled the land as well. Your point is that Yoshua settled the land as well.
Correct.
But the initial sanctification, again, I can't tell you why this is the case, but the initial sanctification was through Kivush. We describe it as Kivush Yoshua, whereas we describe it as Ole Bavel. And that probably is related to, now again, bear in mind, there's one daya that maintains that Kidsha Rishona, Kidsha Lashayta, and Kidsha Lasalava. There's one opinion that maintains that the first Kedusha was for perpetuity as well. But that's not the opinion that we pass on, like, that's the answer of Rabbeinu Tam. So that's how he gets out of Ashkelon.
It's an academic question about Eretz Yisrael, right? It has nothing to do with the kingdom.
What is?
In other words,
it's a universal question about Eretz Yisrael.
I didn't say I thought an issue far away.
Okay, so again, that will be addressed in the Gemara as well. Why didn't it just say Chutz Aretz? Why did it say Medina Sayyam? So if you want, just take a look at the very first Rashi, David, because you brought it up. The very first Rashi says, "Kol chutz la'aretz kari le'medina sayam bar mi bavel kedo amar lekaman." So Medina Sayam is intended to exclude Bavel, and that's the Gemara is going to discuss why Bavel is excluded.
We're dealing with the tale of Ashka of whether this is the Kedusha or not the Kedusha, that has nothing to do with whether the get should be valid or what.
Correct. It's a universal issue pertaining to Eretz Israel. Correct. That's why it's going to be important for us. If it were only a narrow issue pertaining to Bafanai Nachtam, then it would be of interest, of course, but of limited interest. Here we're talking about a universal issue about how we define Eretz Israel itself. And we'll see that, again, that's really what we're going to be driving at tonight. Okay? Tosas similarly raised a question about Rakam B'Chagar, Aval Kasher to Rakam B'Chagar, Mash Mahacha to Havu Chutz La'aretz. We'll say that's the number two. They raise a question about Rakam B'Chagar, but in Yoshua, it's Mashma that those two towns were part of Eretz Yisrael. And Tosas' answer, if you look at, again, the next underline, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down in Tosos. B'yesh Lomer, the Trey Rakam B'Chagar, Hargo, there were two towns called Rakam B'Chagar. One was in Eretz Yisrael and one was outside of Eretz Yisrael. So again, they resolve it by saying there were two different places. One was in Eretz Yisrael, one wasn't. Okay, fine. So Tosas offer pragmatic solutions for those two. The more important issue for us is going to be Akko. It's going to be Akko. So Akko here appears as if it is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Akko is to the north of Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Mishnah said. The problem is, as Tosas note, and here we'll move to the source sheet. We don't need to see this inside in Tosas itself. Is that we have several other sources that seem to indicate that Akko was a part of Eretz Yisrael. And we have this in sources 2 and then in sources 3 and 4. We have really two separate Gemaras, one in Ksubas Daf Kof Yud Beis, another in Gittin Daf Ayin Vav, seem to indicate that Akko is part of Eretz Yisrael. Ksubas Daf Kof Yud Beis Amud Aleph has really a number of just beautiful Gemaras about Eretz Yisrael that just talk about, again, just really talk about how special Eretz Yisrael was. So Rabbi Zeira ki avasalak le Eretz Yisrael, when Rabbi Zeira was going to Eretz Yisrael, lo ashkach mavra le ma'avar, nakat b'mitzvah v'ka'avar. He was trying to cross into Eretz Yisrael. He was trying to cross a river, presumably the Yarden, and he couldn't find a ferry to take him across. So he just immediately he grabbed I think it's like a stick, and he crossed the Yarden River. He crossed it himself without waiting for a ferry. Amalei Ahut Stuki, there was a Stuki watching him, and he said to him, he made a quip, Ama Paziza de Kadmisu Pumaihu La Odnaihu, Akati Pizu Zaihu Kaimaisu. He says, it's a mouthful. The Tzeduki was clear. It was like, you know, the Dr. Seuss trained Tzeduki. So Tzeduki said, this nation that was so brazen or so impatient when accepting the Torah. In other words, he's critiquing the fact that we accepted the Torah with such haste. In other words, we celebrate. How did the Jews accept the Torah? Famously, we said, Naaseh V'Nishma. So we celebrate Naaseh V'Nishma. The Tzeduki was saying, you guys are stupid. That was a really dumb comment. Why did you say Naaseh V'Nishma? You should have really heard the terms and conditions first before you agreed to it. So this nation that agreed to things so hastily, you're still so hasty. You can't wait for the ferry. Why are you going so quickly? And Rabbi Zeira replies, Amar Lei, Duchta de Moshe v'Aaron lo zachula, ana miyemer de zachinala. Moshe and Aaron didn't get to be Zocha to come to this place. And I'm going to wait. Who says I'm going to be Zocha? I'm not deserving either. I'm going to seize the opportunity to enter. It's a beautiful Gemara. It's not really relevant to our topic, but that line, Dukta de Moshe of Aaron lo Zachula, is one of the lines, totally parenthetically, that Rav Lichtenstein said, Rav Huttner shared with him when he was initially considering moving to Eretz Yisrael. I've shared this story from the pulpit before. I think it was when we had our last IDF Kiddush. I shared a story where Rav Aaron went to Eretz Yisrael and he was considering Aliyah at that stage. He was looking around Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Huttner, towards the end of his life, had already moved to Eretz Yisrael. So he went to visit Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner was his Rebbe when he was learning in Chaim Berlin in high school. And Rav Huttner asked him, what's so special about Eretz Yisrael? I love this story. And Rav Lichtenstein started talking about the impressions that Eretz Yisrael made on him. He says, you know, it's very special. The Libra Torah is really fantastic here. It's very inspiring. And Rav Huttner said it was better in Europe. Better in Europe. So then he said, oh, it's amazing how even the broader society has Torah values and is really connected to Torah. Even those who are not personally connected to Torah have some connection to Torah. He said that was better in Europe too. So he's going through his list, and Rav Huttner rejects one after the next, and he's coming up short. He says Rav Huttner just started screaming at him, just throwing psukim and ma'amari chazal, Eretz Asher Shemel Kachadori Shosa, Dukta de lo zachula, Demoshe v'aron lo zachula. He says, you're focusing on all these trivialities. This is a land of the Ribbono Shalom. The Ribbono Shalom is here. He's in front of you, and you're missing it. He just started throwing ma'amari chazal out of him. Rav Lichtenstein said, I left that meeting feeling like a beaten dog, was how he put it. But he says that he deserved his beating, and he was very appreciative to the Rosh Hashiva for pointing it out. So this is one of the Gemaras that he pointed to. Interestingly, the Gemara Ksubas Daf Kof Yud Aleph, just one daf earlier, is the famous Gemara with the Shalosh Shavuos. That's another interesting Gemara. But again, a lot of Eretz Yisrael stuff in these Gemaras. So what is the line that's important for us? So as the Gemara is highlighting the beauty of Eretz Yisrael and how much Rabbi Zeira loved Eretz Yisrael and how much the Amoraim loved Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara records in the bold line of source number two, Rabbi Abba Menashek Kipe to Akko. He would kiss the stones of Akko. Now the strong implication there is that Akko is a part of Eretz Yisrael, right? I don't think Rabbi Abba was kissing the stones of Chutz La'aretz. I can't imagine. I don't know why the Gemara would tell us that. So it's quite evident that at least Rabbi Abba felt that Akko is part of Eretz Yisrael. We also have another Gemara later in Maseches Gittin that seems to indicate the same thing. We have a Mishnah in Gittin on the Ayin Vav Amud Aleph that says as follows: Hareza Giteich Emlo Basi Mikan Ad Shloshim Yom. Somebody gives a get and he gives it on proviso. It's only valid if I don't return within 30 days. He's going to Chutz La'aretz. He got to Akko and turned around. Then his T'nai is not valid. In other words, it is not considered as if he reached Chutz La'aretz, right? He says it's only going to be valid if I reach Chutz La'aretz. And he turns around at Akko. It is not considered as if he reached Chutz La'aretz. I'm sorry, it's considered as if he did reach Chutz La'aretz. Batel t'no. Is it considered as if he reached Chutz La'aretz? So the Gemara in source number four asks, Hareza gite chamlo basi mi vikami ad shloshim yom. Then we're saying that if he reaches Akko, it's as if he reached Chutz La'aretz. L'memra de Akko b'medinas hayam kaima. The Gemara asks explicitly, do you mean to tell me that Akko is part of Chutz La'aretz? Ba'amar Rav Safra, ki havu miftri rabbanan mehadadi. But Rav Safra told us when the Rabbanim would part from each other, in other words, when the Rabbanim from Eretz Yisrael and the Rabbanim from Babel would part, where would they part? The Akko have a miftery. They would part from each other at Akko. Basically, back in the day, back in the times of the Amoraim, just like today, people used to come from Chutz La'aretz to study in Eretz Yisrael. And the Amoraim who were in Eretz Yisrael, when they were returning to Babel, would escort them out. But they felt it was usher for them to leave Eretz Yisrael. So where would they go? They would go to Akko and no further. Now, if they held that it was usher to leave Eretz Yisrael and they would go to Akko, you see clearly that Akko is part of Eretz Yisrael. So you have these two, and Abaye offers some fancy, you know, Abaye Treitanai Kam Amarla, Abaye offers a whole different read of the Mishnah. You see, you clearly have two Gemaras that indicate that Akko is part of Eretz Yisrael. So how do Tosfos answer this Kasha? Tosfos answer this Kasha once again by offering narrow pragmatic answers pertaining to Akko. You'll see it in source number five. Again, you can look through the entire Tosfos, but I isolated the answers here in source number five. Amar Rabbi Natam, to lo kasha midi. Rabbi Natam says it's not really a problem. To Akko haisa chetzia ba'aretz, chetzia b'chutz la'aretz. How does he answer the question? Akko was it was a border town in the truest sense. The border ran right through the middle of Akko. So half of Akko was in Eretz Yisrael, half of Akko was outside of Eretz Yisrael. K'demuchach b'Yushalmi, as the Yushalmi says, v'hacha mari b'oso tzadja b'chutz la'aretz. Here we're dealing with the tzad of Eretz Yisrael that's in chutz la'aretz. Fine, that is Tosfos' answer. Again, a very pragmatic answer, just like we saw by Ashkelon or by Rakan B'chaga, right? There were two different towns. Here, the town is divided. Half of it's in Eretz Yisrael, half of it's in Chutz La'aretz.
Wasn't the border described in Parsha Masay, which represents the Moshe? So was Akko anywhere described in there, or was it in
I confess I don't remember offhand. The borders of Eretz Yisrael are described at the end of Bamidbar.
I'm just wondering if it was including Akko and Ashkelon at that point.
So I don't know. You'd have to get a Balkriya to recall. But I'd imagine the fact that I assume Tosfos knew those Psukim. The fact that they're quoting Softim and Yoshua would presumably indicate that. Again, we can look back at those Psukim. But I'd imagine that the explicit references to Akko and Ashkelon are probably in Nevi'im rather than right. Torah. Okay. I'm sorry?
I thought maybe it's surrounded in
town. Right. So again, Tosfos are arguing that it was a border town in the truest sense. The border ran through Akko. Alternately, if you look at the third line of source number five, the Re offers another pragmatic answer. But Amari, the Re says, Ta'afilu b'tzad shel Eretz Yisrael, tzarech lomar b'fanai nechtav. Really, even in the Eretz Yisrael side of Akko, you need to say b'fanai nechtav. Tavishu b'sof ha'gvul, because it's really at the end of the gvul, even though it's technically in Eretz Yisrael, it's very far from the centers of the yeshivos and the batei dinim, and therefore it still requires b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechta. What the Re is saying is that the borders, as far as Gittin are concerned, are not really Eretz Yisrael or outside of Eretz Yisrael, but how close you are to the Jewish centers, to the centers of Jewish learning. You could have a city like Toronto, which is technically speaking not part of the United States of America. But it's relatively close if you assume that the major Batei Dinim and yeshivas are probably in the tri-state area. It's, you know, Toronto is not so far from those areas. You have another province called Hawaii, right, which is part of the United States of America, but it's very, very far from the Batei Dinim and the yeshivas and things like that. So the Reed would say, look, technically it's part of the United States of America, but because it's so far, it still requires b'fanei nechtam. So again, therefore, don't worry about the borders of Eretz Yisrael so much. It requires b'fanei nechtam. Those are the resolutions of Tosfos, very pragmatic, either geographical, two parts of Akko, two towns with the same name and things like that, or the Reed's assertion that it's all about how close you are to the Batei Dinim. But there's another answer of the Ramban. And the answer of the Ramban is what's going to interest us for tonight. Now, before we get into the Ramban's answer, I want to turn to two very strange Rambams that will help us highlight that will help us to at least serve as some background for what the Ramban is going to answer. And then we'll take a look at how the Ramban resolves this issue. We're going to look at the Rambam in source number 8, the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek Vav Halacha Tezayin. And the Rambam in source number 9, Sanhedrin Perek Dalet Halacha Vav. The background to both of these Rambams is the issue that we discussed. What parts of Eretz Yisrael were sanctified at what time? And when was their lasting sanctification? From the times of Yoshua, from the times of the Olei Baba? I will preface these Rambams in advance by saying there appears to be, at face value, a contradiction between these two Rambams. There appears to be a stira between these two Rambams. The question is there really a contradiction? And if there isn't, how can we possibly resolve the tension that exists between these two Rambams? Okay? I will just read the Rambam. Says the Rambam, Beis HaBechira Perek Vav Halacha Tezayin. V'lama ani omer b'mikdash v'Yerushalayim kedusha rishona kitcha la'asalavo v'kedusha shar eretz Yisrael inyan shviyas u'maisros u'piyotze bahen lo kitcha la'asalavo. The Rambam says, if you want my opinion is that Yerushalayim, the moment it was sanctified forever. This is a controversial opinion of the Rambam. It is not universally agreed upon. The Ravid disagrees. But the Rambam says Yerushalayim always maintained its Kedusha. But the rest of Eretz Yisrael, once it was conquered by other nations, it lost its Kedusha. The Rambam says, you want to know why I hold that way? I'll tell you. Second line of source number 8 after the comma. V'fisha Kedusha ha-migdash v'Yerushalayim ibn ha-shchina, v'shchina eina b'teila. Sanctity of Yerushalayim derives from the Shechina, from Hashem's divine presence. And the Shechina never disappears. It's never relinquished. It's always present. Even once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it retains its Kedusha. However, says the Rambam, bold of source number 8, when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, as it pertains to Shvius, which is Shemitah, when it comes to the obligation to separate Trumas and Maestros, we know that these are all halachos that only apply in Eretz Yisrael. When it comes to all those halachos, and Steve, this gets a little bit back to what you were asking at the outset. Four lines up from the bottom. Eino elam amnesha hu kivush rabin. Why did they have sanctity? Because they were conquered by the masses, because they were conquered by the Bnei Yisrael. The kivon shenilkecha ha'aretz miyadehem, and once the land was taken away from them, batel ha'kivush. It's as if that conquest was reversed. It was undone. V'niftara min ha'torah mimaisros u'mishvias shaharei einam in Eretz Yisrael. And they were no longer obligated in Maaser. They were no longer obligated in Shvius. The Rambam says, why? Shaharei eina min Eretz Yisrael. It is no longer a part of Eretz Yisrael. According to the Rambam, in Beis HaBechira, Perek Vav Halacha Tezayin, if you have parts of Eretz Yisrael that were conquered by Yoshua, but were not subsequently conquered by Ezra and settled by Ezra, are they a part of Eretz Yisrael or are they not? The Rambam couldn't be more clear. What does he say? Eina min Eretz Yisrael. It's not Eretz Yisrael. And he goes on in the rest of the halacha to describe how when the Olei Bavel came up, they re-sanctified it. B'kivan, this is the end of source number 8 after the pulled. B'kivan sha'ala Ezra v'kidsha. Once Ezra came and sanctified it, lo kidsha b'kivush ala b'chazaka, right? He didn't sanctify it through conquest, but rather through settlement. Shech zikuba, because they settled the land. L'fika kol machum shech zikuba Olei Bavel v'neskadish b'kidushas Ezra hashnia. Says anything that was settled by Ezra is sanctified for perpetuity. But just Yoshua? No Ezra? Eina min Eretz Yisrael. Fine. Rambam is quite clear. He doesn't parse his words. He's very clear about what's Eretz Yisrael and what's not. But then we turn to source number 9. Sanhedrin Perek Dalet Halacha Vav. Here the Rambam is talking about the halacha of smicha. Not smicha that we give out nowadays, which is a kind of fake smicha. I confess publicly, it's not a real smicha, but the real halachic smicha that was given in the times of the Tanoim, right? That was handed ish bipi ish from Moshe to Yoshua, and then really just handed down in a direct line all the way back to, that could trace itself all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam says as follows. Ein sochim somchim zakenim b'chutz la'aretz. You're not allowed to give smicha in chutz la'aretz. Interestingly, in the times of the Amoraim, when smicha was starting to wane, right? We had some Amoraim who had smicha and some who did not. And the ones who had smicha were the Amoraim from Eretz Yisrael, like Rabbi Yochanan, for example. Like Rabbi Yochanan still has the title Rebbe, even though he was an Amora. He was a first-generation Amora. He was a student of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, but he still had smicha. He was one of the Gedolim of Eretz Yisrael. He had a base medrash in Tveria. So you already see the discrepancy between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz as far as smicha is concerned. But says the Rambam, you can only give smicha in Eretz Yisrael. Ein sochim zechenim b'chutz la'aretz. Ba'av al-pi she'elu ha-somchin nismichu be'eretz Yisrael. Even though you have somebody who received his own smicha in Eretz Yisrael, he can't go out to Chutz La'aretz and deliver smicha to somebody else. Afilu hayu ha-somchin be'aretz v'hanisma Chutz La'aretz ein sochin. You're standing right on the border. You're in Akko. You're right on the between the two parts of the town. The person giving smicha is in Eretz Yisrael. The person who's getting the smicha is outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam says, no go. Both of them have to be in Eretz Yisrael. Certainly the reverse won't work either. Both of them need to be present. He says if they are both in Eretz Yisrael, they don't need to be standing in the same room, even from a distance. You could do a mail-in smicha. You have to earn it. But if you do, you can mail the smicha from a distance as long as both of them are in Eretz Yisrael. And here comes the critical line for us, the bold of source number 9. The whole Eretz Yisrael, all of Eretz Yisrael, shehechziku ba, ole Mitzrayim, that the ole Mitzrayim, shok, reuya l'smicha, is fitting for smicha. Ole Mitzrayim was who? Yeshua was the ole Mitzrayim. What did the Rambam say in Pesach B'chira Perek Vav? What did he say? Eina min Eretz Yisrael. Here the Rambam says that as far as smicha is concerned, they can't be in Chutz La'aretz, and any place that was hechziku ba'ole Mitzrayim re'uya l'smicha. Seems like a pretty overt contradiction. How do you navigate that?
Could be different standards for smicha versus.
How do you resolve that? Right. And here the Rambam almost fudges the language. Interestingly, right? Hechziku ba'ole Mitzrayim. I don't know what to do with that. I confess to you. But it's very interesting that he does that.
Smicha is not a mitzvah. Yeah. Shvi'is and Mitzvahs is a mitzvah, so that's why you say as far as it's be different.
Say smicha relates to the person, but Mitzvahs, Tumas and Mitzvahs relate to the land.
But clearly smicha can only be delivered in Eretz Yisrael. Right?
I understand, but it has to be the basis.
So I think what you are all alluding to is largely correct. Before we get into that solution, I'll just note that this contradiction in the Rambam is not only within these two halachos. I'm giving you these two halachos as just a demonstrative example. There are many other halachos where the Rambam will either say Eretz Yisrael is not defined by Ole Mitzrayim, or Eretz Yisrael is defined by Ole Mitzrayim. And the Nosei Kalim, the commentators of the Rambam, are just left navigating this web of contradictions regarding what is Eretz Yisrael and what's not. So what I think many of you are alluding to is that evidently we will probably have different standards of Eretz Yisrael because we are dealing with different halachic categories. What was the Rambam dealing with in Beis HaBechira? Look carefully. More of the examples that he kept giving. Shvius and Maestros, Shemitah and Maaser Truma, etc. What is the halacha that we're dealing with in Hilchos Sanhedrin? Smicha. What evidence difference is there between the two? Before we get fancy about halachic differences, there's one almost more basic difference between the two. One is connected to the land, is what we would call a mitzvah hateluya ba'aretz, right? It's almost connected to, if you want, the soil, if you want to get technical, right? It's an agricultural halakha pertaining to the soil of Eretz Yisrael, whereas the other is talking about Eretz Yisrael not as a as a geological entity. It's not talking about the dirt or the soil of Eretz Yisrael. It's talking about Eretz Yisrael as a polity, as some kind of political entity or national entity, right? And perhaps there is room to distinguish between the two. If you look at the Radvaz in source number 7, to source number 10, I'm sorry, he says, "V'chol Eretz Yisrael, af al pi shelo hechziku ba'olei Babel." He says, even though the Ole Babel did not conquer it, he's implicitly raising our question. Even though it's not part of Eretz Yisrael as far as Trumos Umaisos are concerned, regarding Smuchim, it is all Eretz Yisrael. And he says, it is also part of Eretz Yisrael regarding the mitzvah of Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, living in Eretz Yisrael, which is again not soil contingent. It's part of living in Eretz Yisrael. Leinian hanikvar ba, and also regarding buried being buried in Eretz Yisrael. Now there, you could have said it's about the soil because you're being buried in the soil, but it's not a mitzvos teluyos ba'aretz in the sense of agricultural laws, right? It's a part of the broader identity of Eretz Yisrael. L'sharkudushas Eretz Yisrael dinam shavak kwaherech b'zeh ba'al sefer kafter b'ferach ayin sham. Says the sefer kafter b'ferach elaborated on this issue. Interesting, the Kaptar Vaferach himself, he was from the late Rishonim, lived in Provence, ultimately moved to Eretz Yisrael, and I think he moved to not Akko, it would be great if he moved to Akko, to Beit Shan, which was one of the other border towns that are discussed in this Tosfos and the like. So his shita was that there is that difference regarding there's the difference between the agricultural laws and other components of Eretz Yisrael. The way Rav Soloveitchik referred to this chiluk is a chiluk between Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, the sanctity, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and the shame Eretz Yisrael. And the broader, the way I put it before, the broader polity of Eretz Yisrael. You have two components of Eretz Yisrael that are operative. One is the sanctity of almost the soil itself. There's a sanctity to the soil of Eretz Yisrael, to the produce of Eretz Yisrael. And that's why you have an obligation of Trumos, Maasros, Shavias, etc. And then you have the broader identity of Eretz Yisrael. If I would put it in the terms that my Rebbe Rav Rosenzweig likes to use, Eretz Yisrael is the national headquarters or the corporate headquarters of Klal Yisrael. It is the capital of Klal Yisrael. It's our national homeland. And those two dual components of Eretz Yisrael definitely overlap in many ways, but they aren't necessarily identical. Now, to give you another very prominent example, what about the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? And again, we'll go through this very, very quickly because we do want to get back to the Ramban. Can there be a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael if you can't fulfill the mitzvos of Truma, Maaser, etc.? Let's say those mitzvos didn't apply or you were incapable of performing those mitzvos. Would there be a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Would there be a mitzvah of settling Eretz Yisrael? So if you look in Tosfos in source number 7, we're not going to read it inside because we're short on time, but Tosfos quotes the opinion of Rav Chaim Kohn. Rav Chaim Kohn argues that in his day, there was no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Why was there no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Because he said it was impossible to fulfill the mitzvahs to Lios Ba'aretz. It was impossible to fulfill Truma and Maaser and Shemitah, etc. And therefore, there was no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And other Rishonim disagree with him. Other Rishonim don't agree with that assessment that there's no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Why do they disagree? Now, it could be that they felt it was possible to fulfill the mitzvahs, and it was hard. It was undoubtedly difficult to do so in those times, but you could fulfill the mitzvahs. But more likely, they disagreed because who said there's an equation between fulfilling those mitzvahs and the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Those aren't necessarily the same thing. It could be that you can't fulfill any of those mitzvahs, and the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael still applies because all those mitzvahs pertain to Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, but Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, as the Radvaz was suggesting and as implicit in the Rambam, might pertain to a totally different component and definition of Eretz Yisrael. And that is how the Ramban, in short, seems to answer this question. If you look at the very end of source number 11, it's possible that Akko was not part of Eretz Yisrael as far as Trumos and Maasros were concerned. Yet nonetheless, what did Rabbi Abba do when he got to Akko? He would kiss the stones of Akko. He puts it in very inspiring terms. They may not have Kedusha now, but you know what? They will one day have Kedusha, Kedusha Shlishis. Even as there's no Trumos of Masros, it is still part of Eretz Yisrael as far as our love for Eretz Yisrael goes, and as far as the mitzvah of Yishuv Vedira be'Eretz Yisrael, as far as the shame Eretz Yisrael goes, it is very much a part of Eretz Yisrael. So you see how this topic pertaining to, again, which starts as a very, very technical topic pertaining to nuances of geography and halacha and Hilchos Gerushin, actually unfurls a much larger yesod in how we understand Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the shame of Eretz Yisrael, the way they're different, the way they overlap. Of course, Be'ezrus Hashem should inspire us all to further appreciate the special sanctity of Eretz Yisrael and what it means in our spiritual lives.
Source number nine, the Rambam doesn't say it's not part of Eretz Yisrael. He's saying if it was once part of Eretz Yisrael, smichus okay.